Ipse leads the way.
Ipse.
One system, personnel, and pay.
Ipse.
21st century.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining Team Ipse for our podcast, where we give you program status updates on the road to go live. I'm Colonel Rebecca Eggers, the Functional Management Division Chief, and today I bring back Lieutenant Colonel John Elko, our deployment lead, and Sergeant Major Gary Kress, the Senior Enlisted Advisor for Ipse. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, thanks, ma'am. Glad to be here. Always fun to be back.
Glad to be here, ma'am, and good to see you, Sergeant Major.
Yes, sir.
So, system acceptance test, check. Rehearsal of concept drill was our next thing, and we just completed that. And now we're just about to enter the stress test for the program, the limited user test. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel is getting pretty bright. What do you think, Sergeant Major?
Yes, ma'am. That train is coming down the track really fast. Before you know it, I'm not even going to need carbon copies for my lead forms. I can do it all in the system. But, you know, the amount of work that this team has done and you know, my time here on the program, just kind of seeing how we've progressed and you know, really push things along through the development, through tests, through all these different stages is really just remarkable on how much work has been accomplished and where we're going. So very excited to see that.
Wow, you took us to the Wayback Machine with carbon copies. I almost forgot we used to have to do carbon copies for lead forms. That's pretty scary. Absolutely, Sergeant Major. The hard work and dedication the team displays on a daily basis is something I'm actually really proud of. And our team continues to get kudos from Army senior leaders for all they're doing. I mean, we're talking late nights, working through the weekends, anything that we need to do to ensure the system is ready for deployment, we're doing it. And ROC 4 has a lot to do with how we deploy the program. So John, ROC 3 was back in February. Was it just the same drill this time, or what did we do, or what were some of the things we changed in order to make sure ROC 4 was successful?
Well, ma'am, I would say that ROC 4 built on the success of ROC 3. So we saw increased participation across the board. We saw increased activity in the crosswalk staging table, increased input for the day one tasks, and we got a ton of feedback that we're using to shape the way ahead for brownout and cutover. So if you remember from ROC 3 as well, we were proofing out two different over-the-shoulder support concepts, trying to decide what we're going to go with when we get to brownout and cutover. This time around in ROC 4, we rehearsed the hybrid centralized, decentralized OTSS concept that we plan to execute during brownout and cutover. And again, we got a ton of feedback from those on-hand participants and a ton of reps through the tools that we intend to use to track RFIs, to disseminate information to the field, that we're going to continue to refine that plan before we put a flag in the ground and execute later this summer.
Yeah, you know, repetition is really where it's at. And that's why we didn't just do one of these and call it a day. I mean, we're on ROC 4. We continue to learn. And I think, you know, all the work that your team is doing is really getting us there, and the field as well. We get more and more participation, and we do these drills to ensure the field's prepared and can maintain operations when we shut down the legacy systems. So what were the results? Did we accomplish what we thought we would? And how does ROC, you know, these rock drills, how do they play in, and what we learned affect the brownout and cutover?
Roger, ma'am. Like I said, we saw increased participation. Personally, I'm not going to call it a go until every single AG in the Army has participated in some of our events. But this time around, we provided functional overviews and hands-on instruction in the system. What we're hearing back from the participants, that hands-on instruction, the interaction with our instructors, that was invaluable. For those functional overviews and that instruction, we were able to capture recordings that we've got posted out online. We're using those recordings for cleaning up our team's channels so that we've got the most current job aids posted, and we've got the most current recordings for reference as we get into brownout and cutover. We were able to burn down huge numbers of unslotted troops in the crosswalk staging table, like I said. But more importantly, we identified the reasons for the remaining unslotted personnel. So we've got greater fidelity on that way ahead, how we're going to get to that 99.5% slotted mark that we set is our go for decision gate 6 during cutover. We've gotten even closer on provisioning. I don't think we're quite there yet, but we're a lot closer. We got a contingency for folks who aren't provisioned on time, and it gets them fixed inside of 24 hours. We're working to close that gap even further because we know every minute is going to count when we get the brownout and cutover. Something I think we need for brownout and cutover is greater command emphasis on IPSE tasks. Now, for Rock 4, we saw at some of the sites, real-world contingencies interfered at some of those locations. Totally understand. There's a lot going on in the world right now that the Army is responding to. When we do this for real, we need full attention. The consequence of not slotting folks during brownout and cutover because of those real-world contingencies is when we get to go live, units won't be able to see their folks in the system while they're trying to build things like deployment rosters. So we need that command emphasis on the IPSE tasks so that the system supports command priorities from day one.
That's a really good suggestion. I think we'll take that. And because, I mean, really, without command emphasis, I mean, that's where your priorities are set. And as much as we would love for folks not to get their cutover tasks done, it's too much of a risk once we go live. But everything you've mentioned, you know, I can see that light at the end of the tunnel just getting brighter and brighter. I mean, it's getting a little blinding. Do we have a proposed brownout start date? You know, I'm really excited, but I know there's still so much work to do between now and then. And then the cutover guide, I think you've mentioned before, we've got multiple versions of the cutover guide, and you've mentioned it's a living document. So what is new with the cutover guide? When will it be ready to send to the field, or is it ready now to be sent to the field?
Understood, ma'am. So I am tracking that proposed brownout date. We've been vaguely saying around the second week of August for the last couple of months. So I'll say we are now on track with the goal in mind of 13 August for brownout. And that is helping everybody from the line level to the enterprise level dial in their brownout and cutover planning. As far as the cutover guide, I would call it 90% right now. We're finally at the point where we've kicked off a cutover team working group that's going to run every other week on Thursdays. Today, June 9th, is the inaugural at 1500. And our intent there is to bring in those folks from the line level to the enterprise level to get that last 10% of feedback. I don't want to say it's been created in a bubble. We created this in conjunction with our SMEs. The intent for the cutover guide has always been to be the jumping off point for units to create a brownout and cutover SOP that addresses their organization's specific needs. And we're seeing that at the enterprise level. I'm hearing reports back that we're getting it at the unit level, but this working group is where we're going to continue to refine that last 10%. And we want to hear stuff back like, is the guide too restrictive? Does it not provide enough wiggle room for units to execute to meet their organization's specific needs? Or are we not providing enough guidance? Are there contingency plans that we need to provide more detail on? So we're going to be walking through it chapter by chapter over probably the next month or so. So that'll get us two or three of those working groups before we lock the final draft and get it sent out to the field.
Yeah, thanks, John. I know you and your team have been working hard on developing that guide for the total force. And I want the field to know that we recognize that IPSE is a lot. The cutover, the brownout, what's happening during that window. I mean, simply IPSE. So it's really one of the reasons why we're spending so much time, you know, getting feedback from the field and putting these guides together, because we do, you're right, a jumping off point. We need that jumping off point because it's too much to consume from someone who hasn't been working on this program. There's just got to, you know, we've got to make sure that we're leading the field down the path to success. So Sergeant Major, units have time between now and brownout. What should they be doing?
Well, I think there's a few things, ma'am. And, you know, just listen to Colonel Elko discuss all the things, you know, that the team here is doing and how the field's getting ready. You know, it made me think about a quote that an old mentor of mine used to say in that, you know, fail to prepare, then you prepare to fail, right? There's so many different things to do, and it is kind of hard. Maybe if you feel overwhelmed between IPSE preparation and real world things, you know, where should the focus be? What should we be doing? And then the first thing I would really say is probably, while it's generic in nature, right, it's just refining those plans, right? Hopefully for the last few months, you've been able to participate in the events that we've discussed, you know, and then looking at your organization, how will your organization operate during that time? You know, so now that you know, more and more folks are getting trained, participating in these events, understanding the timeline, understanding what's coming, you know, really start to refine those plans. So what you thought maybe you were going to do at the beginning to get ready, now maybe you have the opportunity to say, hey, look, we understand a little bit more. Maybe we should do it this way. So just understanding your organization, the timeline, and really looking at the process of what your organization needs to do to get ready. The second thing I would say is training, right? We continue to harp on training. We've always talked about training because we always talk about it being a weapon system and making sure that our professionals, HR professionals, are trained and ready. So one, we want to make sure that those HR professionals have done their training. We want to make sure that they've completed any user role subcat training that's required. We want to make sure, and we've messaged this a lot for those listeners that may be following our social media, you know, we've really talked a lot about the leaders training, because again, it is so important that anyone who's going to have a part in any action, any type of approval role, if you basically touch an action, a leave form, have some sort of supervisory role and in an action getting completed, you need to get that R3 leaders training done, right? So we really want folks to get that done. And then the last one that we haven't made mandatory, but I always like to encourage leaders to do, is that soldier self-service. Yes, this is HR centric, but every single soldier is going to touch this system. And we want those soldiers to understand what the system is going to be to them. So not necessarily how to kind of click around in there, but to just understand, oh, hey, I go to this system to check my promotion points. I go to IPSA and I can do this on my mobile device to submit my absence request. It kind of gives them that understanding of this is where I go to complete these things and accomplish the administrative requirements and tasks that I need to do for my career. And then the last thing I would say is just continue to inform the leaders and soldiers in your formation. That's only going to help those S1s and G1s. The smarter you make those leaders, you advise them on what's coming, the system capabilities, how things are going to change. And then again, you tell those soldiers in your formation, hey, this is how business is going to be. That will make life easier, because if those folks don't understand capabilities, what's coming, the timeline that it's coming on, it's just going to be a lot of confusion. So again, you can tie that into the refining the plans, but I do think it's a little bit of a separate element, finding that time to get in front of leaders and soldiers to say, hey, I need your attention. This is what's coming.
Yeah, thanks, Sergeant Major. I agree with you wholeheartedly, and we certainly can't stress this enough from our level, and it's what we continue to stress to leaders at the senior levels to get their training done. You know, this training is mandatory for a reason. And for you leaders out there, you got to get your leader training done. It's an hour long course. So make sure you get credit for it. You know, don't be the leader that once this goes live and an action gets routed to you, it gets delayed because you haven't taken your leader's training. It's that important. It will slow down actions once we go live. So make sure you get that done. If you need help, ask your S1, but just get that training done and make sure it's recognized in the system. So we're going live in September, but there's still a lot that we need to do here at IPSA. Sergeant Major, what major events are on our calendar the next couple months?
Well, we certainly have a few left, ma'am. You know, of course, the limited user test, we've talked a lot about that, right? So that's going to kick off here very soon in mid-June and have some final kind of gateways, if you will, for the system to get through. So we'll be following that very closely to make sure that we are on the path to success. So that's really the first one, kind of from the program level and those folks that are tied into that testing, right? Very important to make sure that the system is operating as intended. The second one is, you know, those HR summits. We've done so many of them now. I think we're over 30 at this point over the last 12 plus months, and we've even incorporated some of those pay summits. But if you have an opportunity to get to these HR summits and you haven't been able to get to them before, you know, we do have a few left. So here this month of June, coming up, you know, we have Fort Rucker next week. We have Fort Huachuca the week after that. We have a pay summit coming up in Germany at the very end of the month. And then in July, for those listeners who may be at either Fort Riley or Fort Campbell, we're going to be out there for an HR summit as well. So hopefully folks can dial into those. If not, they can always go back to our S1net and check those recordings. Again, those HR summits are so important because they're not the the necessarily the technical click, click, click. This is how I do things in a system. This is that understanding of what life is going to be like in the R3 environment, you know, how they're going to have to use legacy systems in some cases, how they're still going to need to understand some pay processes. So, you know, the HR summit really does a lot to get after that. Of course, you know, as we get to this final push, we don't want to overlook what we've talked about for so long now, right? Data correctness. We want to make sure that we're getting that data correctness push done to the very end. And much like our training that I highlighted earlier, you know, data correctness by the end of July, right? We don't want to get into brownout and cutover and then say, uh-oh, maybe we should have done this. So by 31 July, you know, let's get that last push on data correctness. Take a look at those folks who need to do their PRRs during and after brownout and cutover, especially to make sure that they're good. But really take that last little bit of time to refine and double check everything. And I think that's really it, you know, over the shoulder support, Colonel Elko's talked quite a bit about understanding what that is, how that is value added to the HR professional, the S1s and G1s, right? That is a little bit of that customer service, if you will, their ability to reach out and get answers. So again, just getting smart, understanding the timeline and getting those sets and reps with training is really what we're getting after here in this last stretch of things that need to get done.
Yeah, thanks, Sergeant Major. You know, it is interesting, you know, started off doing the HR summits last year. And I can definitely feel a difference on where the field is at when we go to these locations. You know, the very first ones, they hadn't done their distance learning training yet. They hadn't done their instructor facilitated training. And now you go and see some of these units that have that complete and the questions are different. Their level of understanding is different. As we go through all of these processes, the HR summits, and we get closer to, you know, go live, there's something really marvelous about seeing all of the puzzle pieces come together and the system really take shape. And we just need to continue to get after it. Us, the field, our leadership, the Army is going to make this happen. And that's it for this episode. Thank you for joining us. If you're interested in additional training opportunities or an upcoming HR summit, please send us an email. And until next time, IPSA is your system.
Motivated soldier, right job, right on time.
24/7, 365.